You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business. A major phishing-as-a-service operation gets taken down by international law enforcement. U.S. election officials are warned of nation-state influence operations. The House votes to limit the Fed's purchase of citizens' personal data. A Michigan healthcare provider suffered a ransomware attack. Critical infrastructure providers struggle to trust cybersecurity tools. Cloudflare reports on DDoS. Kaspersky uncovers new Android banking malware. Kubernetes crypto miners leverage previously patched flaws. The Massachusetts Attorney General emphasizes the responsible use of AI. Our guest, Kayla Barlow, CEO of Cyberbit, joins us to talk about badge swipe fraud as more are returning to the office. And Colorado passes a law to keep big tech out of our heads. It's Thursday, April 18th, 2024. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is your CyberWire Intel Briefing. Thanks for joining us here today. It is great to have you with us. In a major global crackdown, the LabHost phishing-as-a-service platform has been dismantled following a year-long international law enforcement operation, leading to the arrest of 37 suspects, including the platform's original developer. Launched in 2021, LabHost facilitated cybercriminals in orchestrating phishing attacks against North American banks and services through a subscription model. The platform offered phishing kits, hosting infrastructure, and tools for automatic email phishing. Digital security firm Fortra flagged LabHost's burgeoning popularity in February of this year as it began outperforming established phishing-as-a-service providers. Coordinated by Europol with support from 19 countries and private sector giants like Microsoft and Trend Micro, the operation identified over 40,000 phishing domains and 10,000 global users linked to LabHost. One of LabHost's standout tools, LabRat, enabled real-time management of phishing attacks, including capturing two-factor authentication tokens. Action peaked between April 14th and 17th of this year, with simultaneous raids at 70 locations worldwide, arresting key figures behind LabHost and seizing 207 servers in Australia alone. The UK's Metropolitan Police took into custody four individuals, pinpointing the platform's core developer. Before its disruption, LabHost amassed roughly $1.17 million from subscriptions. Following the operation, authorities have begun notifying 800 users of impending investigations, uncovering that LabHost facilitated the theft of nearly 500,000 credit cards and 1 million passwords. Despite a significant outage in October 2023, which sparked exit scam rumors, LabHost resumed full operations by December, with its eventual takedown casting doubt on the outage's connection to law enforcement activities. U.S. election officials have been alerted by CISA, the FBI, and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence about potential nation-state influence operations from Russia, China, and Iran aiming to disrupt the 2024 elections, including the presidential election. These operations intend to erode confidence in democratic institutions and sway public opinion by exploiting societal divisions using methods ranging from generative AI to deepfakes. Tactics include masquerading as legitimate media, voice cloning, cyber intrusions, creating false evidence of incidents, paying influencers without their knowledge of the operation's origin, and using social media to spread disinformation. To combat these threats, the agencies recommend educating the public and election staff on recognizing and countering disinformation, securing IT systems, and using authentication measures for public content. Voters are also encouraged to scrutinize information sources critically, especially for AI-generated content. The U.S. House of Representatives has passed the Fourth Amendment Is Not for Sale Act, aiming to limit the government's ability to purchase Americans' data from data brokers without a warrant or subpoena. This is despite opposition from the Biden administration, citing national security concerns. The bill, which prohibits federal agencies from buying commercially available information, passed with a 219 to 199 vote, seeing bipartisan support and opposition. The White House, alongside some Biden administration officials, criticized the bill as a threat to national security and counterterrorism efforts, calling it unworkable and devastating. However, proponents argue it protects Americans' privacy rights against unreasonable search and seizure, addressing concerns over the unregulated sale of sensitive personal data by data brokers. This legislative move follows revelations about the extensive governmental use of commercially available information and the risks associated with data brokers' business practices. Healthcare provider Cherry Street Services in Michigan has informed over 180,000 individuals about a ransomware attack on December 21, 2023, that compromised personal data, including social security numbers and health information. After initially disclosing the incident in early January, Cherry Health confirmed ransomware involvement and completed risk assessment by March 25th of this year. Affected individuals are being offered free credit monitoring and identity protection services. Cherry Health, with more than 20 locations and 800 healthcare professionals, continues to respond to the aftermath of the attack. A report from security firm Bridewell indicates that critical national infrastructure providers are experiencing diminished trust in cybersecurity tools, exacerbated by sophisticated nation-state attacks, particularly from China and Russia. Interviews with over 1,000 CISOs in the U.S. and U.K. reveal a 121% increase in concerns over cybersecurity tool trust from last year. Additionally, cybersecurity budgets have sharply decreased, with allocations for IT and operational technology dropping significantly. Despite financial constraints, 30% of critical national infrastructure victims of ransomware paid extortionists, potentially risking legal issues. Moreover, ransomware attacks have had psychological impacts on employees. Bridewell advocates for robust security strategies to mitigate these risks and avoid the difficult choice of paying ransoms. Cloudflare's most recent DDoS threat report, covering the first quarter of 2024, reveals a 50% year-over-year increase in DDoS attacks, with 4.5 million incidents mitigated. DNS-based attacks surged by 80%, remaining the most common vector. A notable spike occurred in Sweden, with attacks up 466% following its NATO acceptance, echoing Finland's previous experience. The report also highlighted the persistence of Mirai variant botnets, responsible for a 2 terabit per second attack against an Asian hosting provider. Additionally, concerns about sophisticated DNS-based DDoS threats prompted the introduction of Cloudflare's advanced DNS protection system. Despite overall increases in DDoS activity, budget allocations for cybersecurity within IT and OT sectors have decreased, underscoring the growing challenge of defending against these evolving cyber threats. SumniBot, a new Android banking malware, employs a novel obfuscation technique by manipulating the Android manifest parsing process, thus dodging standard security measures on Android phones for info-stealing activities. Kaspersky researchers found that SumniBot alters the manifest file's compression value and size, and uses excessively long XML namespace strings to confuse analysis tools. Once installed, it stealthily performs malicious activities like data theft and command execution while primarily targeting Korean users. The malware's discovery has prompted notifications to Google regarding the limitations of the APK analyzer against such evasion techniques. Attackers are exploiting critical vulnerabilities in Open Metadata, an open-source data catalog platform, to conduct a Kubernetes crypto mining campaign. Microsoft discovered the campaign, leveraging flaws patched on March 15th. These vulnerabilities allow for remote code execution and authentication bypass, enabling attackers to install crypto mining malware on unpatched internet-exposed systems. The malware, hosted on a server in China, aims to mine cryptocurrency, with attackers leaving notes soliciting Monero donations. They maintain access through reverse shell connections and scheduled cron jobs. Admins are advised to update their software and secure their systems against these exploits. The Massachusetts Attorney General, Andrea Campbell, has issued a warning that developers, suppliers, and users of artificial intelligence must adhere to state consumer protection, anti-discrimination, and data privacy laws amid the rising use of AI and algorithmic decision-making. The advisory emphasizes the application of existing laws to AI technologies, highlighting concerns over bias, lack of transparency, and potential harms. Campbell underscored the balance between AI's potential benefits and the risks it poses, such as discrimination and privacy breaches. Misrepresentation of AI capabilities, using AI for deceptive practices, and failing to disclose AI interaction to consumers could violate state laws. The advisory also focuses on ensuring AI systems are free from bias before market entry and stresses the importance of transparency in AI interactions. Coming up after the break, our guest Caleb Barlow from Cyberbit joins us to talk about badge swipe fraud as more folks are returning to the office. Stay with us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. It is always my pleasure to welcome back to the show Caleb Barlow. He is the CEO of Cyberbit. Caleb, welcome back.
Dave Bittner, the voice of the cybersecurity industry. How are you today?
I am well, thanks. Listen, I want to talk today about return to office and some of the physical security issues that folks are facing here. I know this is something you've had your eye on here. What can you share with us today?
Well, it isn't so much I've had my eye on it. It's friends of mine that work at large companies are complaining about it. And, you know, we all know the go back to the office thing and everybody wants more innovation that comes from being in the office. But there's a new thing that's emerging called coffee badging. Have you ever heard of, are you a coffee badger, Dave?
If I am, I'm not aware that I am. So please educate me.
I don't think you can be in your job because you actually need to be in a studio. But what this involves is the idea that I don't want to go back to the office. I work at one of these big companies in a huge cube farm. And when I do go into the office, I probably don't have meetings with actual live people. I more often than not go into the office and then just get on Zoom and have a bunch of meetings with people on Zoom. So as you can imagine, lots of people are pushing back on this. And of course, the challenge that companies and managers have is, well, we'll just check your badge swipes. So what they're doing is something called coffee badging, where you show up in the office, you swipe your badge, you get a cup of coffee, you talk to a bunch of people so they know you were there, and then you walk back out and go home. And ideally, you do this around the times that you don't have high traffic. Now, I happen to live in the greater Boston area where there is brutal traffic in the morning, and coffee badging is becoming a big thing. But oh wait, Dave, there's been a survey. Owl Labs surveyed 2,000 full-time workers in the US and found out, can you guess, Gabe, how many are coffee badging?
Oh my God. Well, percentage-wise, let me just—
Yes.
Let me just say 20%.
Oh, you're not even close. Try 60%
are
coffee badging.
I have far too much faith in humanity, or not enough.
And it breaks down on men, male and female, 62% of men, 38% of women, much higher with millennials. A full 63% of millennials are coffee badging, and only 38% of boomers. Now, the boomers probably never left the office. They never got the message that you could go home.
Right.
But I mean, this is unreal. Now, there's other security problems that come into this.
Well,
you
want
to guess what comes next, Dave?
Let's see. Whenever we think about badging and physical security, we talk about people, you know, following other people in and that sort of thing, you know, tagging along. Are we headed in that direction or somewhere else?
Oh, somewhere else. If I don't want to go to the office anyway.
Okay. How about I give my badge to someone else? And they badge
ding,
in.
Ding, 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 ding.
Okay. So this is the equivalent of having somebody else punch your time clock for you, right?
No, this is what we're doing now to be green. We have to go into the office. Our badge has to go into the office.
Okay.
We don't want to commute.
No.
So what we're going to do is we're going to ride share. So one employee from our community is going to grab 5 or 10 badges, or worse yet, we find some gig worker to go take 5 or 10 badges into the office, show up, swipe the badges, and go home.
No.
And this issue apparently is fairly rampant.
What? That can't be real. You're gonna send a stranger to the office.
Oh, maybe not a stranger. Maybe we're work colleagues.
Okay.
So I'll tell you what, Dave. I'll take Monday. You take Tuesday. We'll get Peter Kilpie to take Wednesday.
Yep.
And all of us only have to go into the office one day a week, and we only have to show up for coffee.
I like it.
It's not a bad gig.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a classic example of really bad HR practices causing a massive security problem. And here's the attitude amongst most of these employees. They don't care.
Right.
Go ahead and fire me because I actually don't want a job where I have to commute into the office. And this is the fundamental issue of where we've really got to collide kind of human and people resources and what we're trying to get out of people with a conversation with a CISO. So if you have one of these return to the office initiatives and you're working just off of badge swipes and you're the CISO, you probably need to be complaining pretty heavily about the security ramifications of this policy.
Well, and just to be crystal clear here, I mean, in your mind, what are the obvious security issues that go with this?
Well, I mean, what also happened over the course of COVID is everybody cut costs because everybody went home and they got rid of the receptionists. So in a lot of these big companies, certainly companies I've worked in, there's nobody there. You walk into the office, there's a badge. There's not even a security officer there. I mean, one of the companies I worked at, security was three states away. You could have been anybody. I mean, I suppose you could maybe do facial recognition. Nobody's doing that. You look at the badge reader, the thing's 15 years old. There's no way anybody's doing facial recognition to figure out if this is actually you. So, you know, you've got a real problem if you're worried about random people walking around your office, probably getting some coffee. They could be just a gig worker. And, you know, I think the also obviously updating policies. There have been some really bad examples of this, probably the most notable of which is TikTok at their offices. Got a lot of pushback from a tool called MyRTO, which stands for Return to the Office, that would not only track badge swipes, but we'd even ask employees to submit reasons why they were not there.
So it's looking at security footage or something to tell if you're not at your cube?
No, it's back to looking at the security swipes. But remember back in grade school, well, you have kids. If your kid doesn't show up at school,
right.
If you don't call the school, the truant officer calls to say, Dave,
you get an email.
Why are your kids not in school? Right. Do you have a doctor's note?
Right.
This is literally the equivalent in a professional world of saying, Dave, do you have a doctor's note? Because you weren't in the office today.
Yeah.
It's not good.
No, and I, you know what? What I think this really shines a light on here is like, isn't this unintended consequences? I mean, you're just, the people who are trying to encourage back to work, it seems to me they're not thinking about, or back to office, I should say, they're not thinking about the downstream security implications of these policy decisions they put in place.
100%. And the point is, you need to have a reason to go back in the office. So I'll give you one example. One of the private equity firm that I do some work for, you know, they've got this amazing whack to the office policy, which is, hey, we want you in the office on these days of the week and everybody's going to come in. And by the way, when you come in, we're going to serve you lunch and everybody should eat lunch together. And what ends up coming out of it as a byproduct is this, you know, kind of amazing, you know, coffee culture of everybody's got this hour or two every week where they're around, you know, around a table talking and exchanging ideas. And that's where innovation comes from, right? When you're sending people and demanding they go into a cube farm to get on a Zoom call, you're kind of missing the point of getting people back in the office.
Right. I agree.
And then there's a security problem that comes with it, is my point.
Yeah. Yeah. I maintain that a big part of this is that there's nothing a CEO likes more. And a present company excluded, of course, Caleb. But there's nothing a CEO likes more than being able to give one of their CEO buddies the grand tour of the office, right? And show them around and say, look at all these people here. Look at this.
Working away.
Look at all these people work who are under my command. Look at them all. Look at them. And so when people are working from home, you've lost the ability to do that. And I think for a lot of CEOs, that rubs them the wrong way. And it drives a lot of the desire to bring people back in. That's just my theory.
Well, and here's the other thing, right? There is no question that getting people in person can drive innovation and can drive new ideas. No question at all about it. But there are other ways to get people in person and get that innovation to occur. The lowest common denominator with the least innovative ideas is the one that says, I'm going to watch you based on your badge swipes and make sure you come into the office.
Agreed. All right. Well, Caleb Barlow is CEO at Cyberbit. Caleb, thanks so much for joining us. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. And finally, in an era where the line between science fiction and reality increasingly blurs, Colorado has taken a pioneering step to safeguard the sanctity of our innermost thoughts. With the stroke of Governor Jared Polis's pen, the state has boldly declared that our neural data, the intimate electrical whispers of our brains, deserves protection from the voracious appetite of emerging technologies. By expanding the definition of sensitive data to include our biological and neural information, the state is not just protecting us from today's privacy intrusions, but also those of a future we're still trying to fathom. It's a reminder that as technology leaps forward, our legal frameworks must evolve too, to preserve our dignity and autonomy. Colorado lawmakers say this isn't about stifling innovation or putting a damper on the potential benefits that neurotechnologies could bring. It's about proceeding with caution and respect for individual rights in uncharted territories. After all, the essence of who we are, our thoughts, emotions, and memories, should not be up for grabs. It's a bold move, acknowledging the profound implications of neurotechnology and its potential to transcend the boundaries of personal privacy. In a world where your brain's data could reveal more about you than your social media profiles ever could, Colorado is setting a precedent for the rest of the nation, perhaps even the world, to follow. The legislation isn't just about protecting privacy, it's about maintaining our autonomy, ensuring that as we stand on the brink of this new technological era, we retain control over the most private parts of ourselves. And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. We'd love to know what you think of this podcast. You can email us at cyberwire@n2k.com. N2K Strategic Workforce Intelligence optimizes the value of your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your team smarter. Learn more at n2k.com. This episode was produced by Liz Stokes. Our mixer is Trey Hester, with original music by Elliot Peltzman. Our executive producers are Jennifer Iben and Brandon Karp. Our executive editor is Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.